Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. Today we're talking with Amy Volk, Maine State Representative for District 127, Scarborough, Maine. Amy, great to be on the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You know, it's important that HR professionals, business leaders, understand the legislative process. I'm not sure all of them do, and I'm not sure that there has been a constant effort to try to get them to connect with the legislature as much as they probably should. Talk about some of the efforts that are being made and maybe why it's important that these reach outs are happening.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right, and I think that professionals and business owners don't understand how easy it is actually to communicate with their state rep or their state senators on issues that will affect their businesses and their jobs. And it is very important. Of course, businesses in this state are represented by the Maine State Chamber, and they sort of represent business interests in general. But they're only one voice in the State House. And when it comes right down to it, there are a lot of other voices that often drown out that one voice speaking for businesses. I should also say that the National Federation of Independent Businesses has, they have a representative in Augusta who is there frequently as well, representing independent businesses, smaller businesses, and then there's the Restaurants Association and the Innkeepers Association, the tourism industry. But the rank and file businesses owned by Mainers, particularly small businesses, I think really should take the opportunity to make their voices be heard, because we hear from the Maine People's Alliance, which is a very, very powerful sort of social activist organization. We hear from the unions way beyond the number of people that they actually represent in the workforce.
When you're talking about number of business people that actually contact you or contact members of the legislature, give us a number. Is it a surprise if you get two calls?
If I got 100? Three calls on an issue, I would be surprised. Yes.
Really? Why
Absolutely.
Do you think that is? Is it just because that people feel that they can't have a voice or that all hope is lost? Or, you know, why is that?
That could be part of it. It could be somewhat, I'm a Republican, so they feel that I'm going to represent business interests well. But I don't think that's it. I think that most people think everybody else is doing the work. And when it comes right down to it, it's sort of the restaurant nobody goes to anymore because it's too crowded, you know? Nobody contacts their state rep because everybody else is doing it. Guess what? No, they're not. You know, we hear from organized efforts. I get quite a few form emails that have automatically been sent often on behalf of somebody, and they may not even be aware that the email was sent, or they may have clicked on a button without even realizing that that was going to send me an email. And you can discern those really quickly. And they are practically ignored. I don't want to say completely ignored, but if you couldn't take the time to write a sentence or two yourself about an issue, then it's probably really not that important to you. But yeah, to hear from two or three businesses from my district on an issue, say, for example, on the minimum wage hike, it didn't happen. You know, and I know that they're opposed to it, but if I, you know, stop in and ask, hey, how do you feel if we make you have to increase minimum wage to your workers by, you know, 50 cents or a dollar an hour, they would say, I can't afford that. But a lot of times they're busy running their businesses.
I was just going to ask that question.
Yeah.
And that is one of the challenges. Look, I own a business. We know that. You own a business. We're doing our thing. Right. We're out there doing our day-to-day work. And so you hear it on the radio, you hear it on TV, you hear about a bill, and you go, okay, oh,
Well, that would be bad.
Yep.
But I'm too busy. I got things to do, and they don't. And you just don't pick up the time. Or maybe I'll call, and then something happens, of course, and you just don't.
Right.
And there is the feeling that it won't help anyways. You know. So I guess my question is, in this case, how can you explain to either HR professionals, business leaders out there, that it really does make a difference? Can they actually sway a vote? Can they make you think about a decision? Because I think that's also part of the fear, is that the party line will do the party line, right? And either Republican or Democrat, mm-hmm. or either independent, will just vote a party line. How do we fix that and tell people that it's actually something that could actually be changed, a decision maker to make somebody make a different decision?
Yeah, that's a big question. I can only speak for myself and say that hearing from a lot of people on an issue definitely would influence, particularly if they're from my district, you know?
Right.
That the voice, if it's outside of my district, I don't hear it quite as loudly. But to hear specifically from people within my district about a specific issue does make a difference. And unless I see compelling evidence or I learn compelling evidence, sometimes people don't have the whole story when they contact you on an issue as well, particularly on some of the social issues. Like if you want to, you know, I don't want to get completely into the weeds, but take Medicaid expansion, for example. There were a lot of people who had a lot of misinformation about that issue and couldn't understand why we would be opposed to taking free money. It's free money. Why wouldn't we want it? It's free money. It's not going to cost us anything. Well, first of all, money comes from somewhere, even if it's coming from the federal government. Second of all, there were a lot of other costs that weren't being covered beyond just the care. Third of all, there's another option coming along that forces people to take a little more personal responsibility for their health in having copays, for example, in having a small premium that they have to pay. So they'll think twice before showing up on Sunday night at the ER rather than waiting until Monday morning and calling their doctor, because they don't want to pay a $150 copay at the ER if they can pay a $10 copay at their primary care physician. So, you know, that's an example where sometimes people don't have all the facts. But if people are well informed, then we definitely can have our minds changed on an issue. And, you know, to go back to minimum wage, that's sort of an easy one. Down in this part of the state, there actually aren't that many jobs that pay minimum wage, and almost all of those jobs are held by students, not adults who are trying to take care of their families.
Right.
And so, you know, that one was one that I didn't hear a lot on. But the thing is that if minimum wage is increased, as the legislature passed and the governor vetoed it, and we were able to sustain that veto, we were going to see a lot of increased costs on the state level, because it was going to affect how we pay, like what the beginning level of state workers' pay was. That was all going to go up. And then if you're bumping that person up, the person above them has to get bumped up. And it kind of dominoes that way. And it's the same thing with businesses. You know, I mean, if the business next door, if you don't pay minimum wage, but the business next door does, and suddenly they're paying $8 an hour, and you're still only paying $8 an hour, but you don't want a minimum wage worker. You want someone that is maybe better quality, more experienced worker. You're suddenly going to have to pay $9 an hour. And so it's really important for people to feel they have a voice, and it's not that difficult. Our bills are written in readily understood language. They're not written in legalese. You don't have to have a legal background to understand them.
You don't need to be a lawyer.
Absolutely not. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. And I can read and understand just about every bill that I've seen just at face value. And I've looked at bills from other states, and that's not always the case. So I think we're actually really fortunate in Maine that our bills are very easy to understand. You can Google search anything these days. And you don't have to read the entire bill. Even just reading the bill summary will give you a really good idea of what that bill does, and you'll immediately know how that's going to impact you if you're an HR professional or a business owner.
You know, it's interesting. I think this is really important for, you know, the general public to understand, mm-hmm. is that there isn't enough representatives hearing from their representatives.
No.
And that's an interesting dynamic that I'm not sure everybody understands. And it's interesting, and before I spoke to you here today, I did talk to a number of people who I know in the legislature or former legislatures.
Yeah.
And they all said the same thing, that if they got two or three calls, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that was like a big deal. Like, this must be a major issue. And it might not be, but in two or three calls made it a big deal. And it wasn't from the lobbyists, or it wasn't from some group or something. It's individual people that are just calling to talk about a bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that they weren't doing, you know, there's always one or two that may call all the time about everything.
Right.
But these are just, you know, particular individuals on a particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I believe a couple months ago, the HR professionals came up and had an HR professionals day up at the State House. Tell us a little bit about that, why it was important, and how it went.
I think it's important for anybody to come visit the State House, but particularly HR professionals, because they're on the front line of seeing the effects of changes in law, in employment law in particular, because they're the ones who are doing the hiring. They're the ones that are doing the documenting if workers are making mistakes. And they're the ones who ultimately sometimes do the firing. And they also just have to keep track of what their responsibilities are as employers. They need to keep the pulse of state employment law. And for them to come up, and I think they do it every year or two.
They do.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just really important for them to get to meet us, to see that we're real people, to see that we're open to hearing from them, talking to them, to get some questions answered, you know, face to face, and talk about legislation. And it was my pleasure to get to meet with some of those people, and I did get to answer some questions. We talked about some of the bills that were still pending at that time, and, you know, I enjoyed it. I hope that they did, too. It seemed like a good group.
You are listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, this is Peter Boldick at Harvest Hill Farms. For those folks who are looking for healthy eating alternatives, we have been raising natural range-fed beef and poultry right here in the great state of Maine for over 15 years. Let us introduce you to our Never Ever program. Our animals are never ever introduced to growth hormones or antibiotics, only raised as nature intended. We are conveniently located on Route 26 in Mechanic Falls. To find out more, call us at 998-5485 or go to our website, harvesthillfarms.com. That's harvesthillfarms.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We're talking to Maine State Representative Amy Volk. The real people, as she described herself back in the first segment here. Amy, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, David.
All right. You know, it's interesting. We talked about the first section about why it's important. Mm-hmm. And I think if there was ever a takeaway that comes out of this, it's the fact that really a call can make a difference because there aren't calls being made, which I find amazing. And though I think to myself, I don't know, I think I've called once in the past 2 years.
So there you go.
And it wasn't even to my own representative. It was to one I knew very well and complained about a bill. But anyways, it is a great takeaway for everyone.
Yeah.
One of the things that always comes up in discussion is I went up to the legislature and actually shadowed a friend of mine, Meredith Burgess. You probably know.
Oh, yeah. Meredith and I were seatmates.
Yes.
So she's lovely.
She's great. And I shadowed her for a full day in the legislature.
Yeah.
And that was an education, let me tell you. And she's on a bunch of committees. Yep. She's on, all these things. And she's no longer there now and busy running her own business. But so you're on the Labor, Commerce, Research, and Economic Development Committee, and you're the minority leader. Is
that correct? Correct.
That's awesome. So tell us about how committees work, why, and how people can actually talk in front of a committee about an idea or about their opinions, and how that all goes about working.
Okay, so most of the work of the legislature happens in committee, and this is the thing that most people, unless they've shadowed like you have, don't quite understand. We don't debate every bill on the floor of the House. Most of the bills are debated and worked on while they're still in committee. It's actually pretty rare to have an amendment on the floor of either the House or the Senate, except maybe towards the end of session. So most of the work gets done in committee, and every bill is given a public hearing, and that's the opportunity for the public to weigh in, either in person or by email or by phone. And so what's important for HR professionals to know is that if they watch, and again, you can do this online by Googling Maine Labor, Commerce, Research, and Economic Development Committee or through the Maine State Legislature website, it's pretty easy to navigate. You can see the bills that are coming up in committee. If you subscribe to the Maine State Chamber, their impact newsletter is very good, and that will really spell right out all the bills that they're watching. And that would give HR professionals a really good chance. And you can, again, look that up online as well if you don't get it by snail mail. So they can weigh in, like I said, in person and bring 20 copies of written testimony with them. Or they can
20 copies?
20 copies, because there has to be enough for all the members of the committee. There's normally 13 members in the committee. And then also a few extra copies for the clerk and for, you know, anyone in the room that might be interested. Or you can simply just email the members of that committee with your opinion. You know, this would be damaging to the business that I work for. This would be make my job more difficult. You know, this is a paperwork nightmare. You know, I mean, or this would be great. This is a problem for our business. And, you know, this bill would solve that problem. You know, they're not all negative.
Right. And I think it is important for people to give the facts, right, Zana, to document why they give opinion, not just opinion for opinion's sake. Right?
Yep.
So they actually have facts and maybe even figures to back up what they're saying.
But it doesn't have to be long and exhaustive either. You know, in fact, if it's more than a paragraph, chances are the whole thing's not going to get read, especially in email form. You know, I think that if you show up in person, that carries a little bit more weight. But again, if it's a case where there are 50 people there and they're all pretty much saying the same thing, then, you know, you may be asked to just simply stand up and say, I agree with, you know, what's been said before me, and here's my written testimony, and then you get to go home. But again, it goes back to, we don't hear from that many rank and file Mainers. We just don't. And so, you know, when we do hear from people, it's good to know what, you know, what the public thinks. Really good example was in the 125th legislature, we had a bill that had come up over and over again, which would have allowed auto dealers to be open on Sundays. And let me tell you, we heard from so many salesmen spouses, you know, saleswomen spouses, owners of auto dealerships. I mean, we heard from everybody. And they all said, we don't want to be open on a Sunday. It's our one day off during the week that we can count on. And, you know, I mean, I probably heard from 50 people around the state. And that had a really big impact. And that's the other thing. When it's a committee issue, then we're not so focused on hearing from our own district. If it's a bill that is in my committee, then I want to hear from anybody in the state.
Well, that's important to note, too, because we talked about last time that if you're outside of the district, you might not hear it as loudly.
Right.
It's different when there's a bill in committee.
Absolutely. And for the committee that I'm serving on. And that's true for anybody for their committee that they're serving on.
So when somebody is looking to, hey, I'd like to say something at the legislature, how do they sign up? How do they, what's the process they go through to make that happen?
Well, one thing you can do, if you have heard that a bill is coming up, but it hasn't yet been scheduled for a hearing, you can contact the committee clerk, again, by email or by phone, and it's all online, all the contact information, and you can simply say, I'd like to be notified when this is scheduled, and then she will put you on the list, and you'll receive an email. Normally, it's 2 weeks advance, but when we get towards the end of our work, those timelines shrink a little bit, and you might only get a couple of days notification, unfortunately, or sometimes, you know, hardly any notification at all if they waive the notification rules, which did happen in this past session. But and then you just show up for the time. It's normally either 10 a.m. or 1 o'clock for an afternoon hearing, and you just show up, and it may not be the first bill that we're hearing for that day. It might be, you know, second or third or fourth or fifth or even beyond. And so then at that point, it's kind of a waiting game for it to come up. And so I suggest people bring work with them. But, you know, it's not always a long process. I mean, sometimes we move through bills really quickly. And if we have a lot of people show up on a particular bill, that bill's typically heard first.
You know, as I said, it is interesting. When I went up and did that in the legislature, mm-hmm. I think at the time it was the cell phone bill.
Okay.
And people were talking about, you know, the possible radiation of cell phones and so forth. And there were a ton of people there on both sides of the equation. It was quite a bill. And it was an interesting process. It was something that I didn't anticipate it being so organized, actually. Mm-hmm. It was more organized than I thought it would be, and it was, but it was very parliamentary, too, and I thought that was a little bit much. But that's, you know, it was interesting to watch the process go through.
Was this debate in the chamber or in the committee?
It was in committee. Okay. It was in committee. It was in committee.
It's fascinating because, I mean, I didn't have any much of a background in labor issues, and you know, it's amazing the things that become interesting when you start learning the facts.
What got you into politics? What got you into deciding to be a legislator?
Well, I had always taken an interest in issues and everything, but I was not active in politics in any way. I had never attended, for example, a town committee meeting even or anything like that. But I was unhappy with the representation for my district at the time, and no one was opposing that representative, and I felt like I needed to either stand up or sit down and be quiet. And so,
and we've established today that's not possible.
Yeah, right. So, if not me, then who? Right.
That's right. That's right. No, that's great. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people sometimes think about these things, but they're working. They're doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing what they have to do for a day in, day out. Right. And it is a time commitment, correct? I mean,
it's a huge time commitment. Don't let anyone ever tell you it's not. They were actually trying to get my husband to run. And, I mean, he runs a business. He has, you know, over 70 employees and is very dedicated to the success of that business. He also coaches. He's a father of four. He actually cares about seeing me occasionally. And there was no way that he possibly could have done this. You have to either have a business that an employer who's extremely understanding and tolerant,
right?
And or you have to be self-employed, and your business can basically run itself without you being there all the time. Or you have to have the luxury of not having to be the breadwinner in your home, because we also don't get paid much.
No, that's true. That's true.
So there's a lot of retired people, and that, I mean, when you look around the legislature and you see the number of retired people, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because that doesn't necessarily always bring a full body of experience from the different generations, and that is a challenge.
Yeah.
It is a challenge when it's all retired, or it's mostly nonprofit, or it's mostly whatever it is, educators, and I understand that is a challenge.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking here. We've done about a half-hour segment here on the HR Power Hour. The second half, we're going to talk about some bills from the 125th Maine Legislature that are going to be affecting employers out there during the second half of the year and beyond. And so you're listening to HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
News Talk WLOB, the Portland Sea Dogs, and the AARP have teamed up to bring you the 8th annual Operation Patriotism Game to honor those who have served or are serving the United States military. The game is Friday night, August 30th, the kickoff to the Labor Day weekend. The tickets are free to you and your family, and please don't be shy about requesting tickets. No request is too large. Simply go to our website, WLOBradio.com, click on the yellow Operation Patriotism ribbon, and that'll tell you how to get your free tickets for you and your family. We also want to thank our additional partners for this game, Bangor Savings Bank, where you matter more, the Maine Hospital Association, Roe Ford, Westbrook Auburn, and the Oxford Casino. All guests of the Oxford Casino and its venues must be 21 years of age or older. Got a gambling problem? Call 211 for help. Don't forget, it's the 8th annual Operation Patriotism Game, Friday night, August 30th. Go to our website, WLOBradio.com, to find out how to get your free tickets.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Amy Volk, and she is a Maine State Representative. How exciting. It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
It's never dull.
You know, I've got to tell you, if you didn't listen to the first half of this show, you need to go back and go to HRPowerHour.com and learn why your voice does count. And the fact that legislatures don't actually hear from people is fascinating to imagine. That it really is that silly.
And unfortunate, considering how easy it is.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah. So we said that we would talk about the second half here, about some of the legislative bills that passed, some of the things that are happening, and how they're going to affect employers. So I think we'll start with the first one. We'll just call it LD-929, because I'm sure that's what everybody's going to call it. No, I'm just kidding. It's the newly hired employee definitions. Talk a little bit about that, what that means, and how that's going to affect employers.
A lot of times, federal law will change, and then Maine law has to change to conform with federal law. And so this is the case with this bill. It wasn't really a big deal, but it just defined a newly hired employee as a person who's not previously been employed by that employer, or who was separated from prior employment by the same employer for a period of at least 60 days consecutively. And so it's just conforming our law to the federal definition, because that makes things simpler for employers.
Simpler. What a concept.
Yeah,
okay,
you hope.
Good. The next one is LD-1343. Improve work readiness for families facing significant barriers to employment. Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, the Aspire TANF program is one that takes people who are receiving temporary assistance to needy families and basically supports them while they gain job skills or while they go to school. And so that's a good program. We are certainly all in favor of anyone with children. I believe to collect TANF, you have to have dependents. And so, you know, we're all in favor of those people gaining skills to become employed successfully. But at times, a case manager may detect that there's something else going on, and feel that, you know, the person really might have some underlying issues that need to be assessed. And so basically this just provides a vehicle for them to have the proper screening done. And it also says that after the assessment, the case manager, in coordination with the participant, is directed to establish a plan for them and for their family. And it also clarifies that if the person fails to participate without good cause, then they may be sanctioned or basically lose some of their benefits.
So there is a potential penalty clause in there.
Yeah, if they refuse to cooperate, you know, basically with the plan that the case manager has put forward. So, you know, we want to identify when there's something else going on. There may be dependency issues, there may be mental health issues, there may be abuse within the family happening by a partner or who knows. So this just basically makes sure that the person is really in a place where they're going to be able to benefit from the Aspire program.
No, I think that's good. I think it's important that there are criteria based
upon
that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. In terms of, all right, the next one here is Employment First, 1352.
Yes.
It talks about the Department of Education and the Department of Health and Services and the Department of Labor.
And the Department of Labor
in carrying out these duties. So talk a little about what's important about this.
I like the goals of this bill tremendously. This was Senator Alfond's bill, Senate President. And basically, I guess what we've found is that people who have a disability are oftentimes have been treated as though they're incapable of work. And that is really depriving them of the dignity of work. And we all know that when you work, you feel a pride within yourself. And just because you are disabled doesn't mean that you're incapable of working. I have a son who has Asperger's syndrome. He certainly qualifies for disability. He could probably qualify for SSI. But you know what? He's not even 22 years old yet. And we feel as though we need to give him every support, every opportunity to have the pride of earning his own living. And so what this says is that the Department of Labor, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Education should make every effort to encourage disabled people, not at the expense of if they qualify for SSI or are already receiving SSI, not at the expense of jeopardizing that if they don't wish to do that, but that they should be viewed as capable of working. They should be encouraged to work if they desire to work, and if they feel it's something that they want to do. They shouldn't just automatically be told, well, why don't you just go home and collect your check for the rest of your life? That's not dignified for anybody. And so I applaud Senator Alfond and all of the people who collaborated on this bill. We heard from, you know, again, going back to hearing from a lot of people, we had a lot of people with disabilities, a lot of disability organizations come in front of us in support of this bill. It's a good bill. My only concern with it is that there was virtually no business representation on the board. It's a very large board. Senator Alfond did allow us to add one representative from the Manufacturing Association on there, but I would have liked to have seen more business leaders on that board because they're the ones that know what their needs are. They're the ones that know what's going to trip a disabled person up in being successful in the workforce. So, you know, that's my only disappointment, but there's nothing saying that we can't, you know, eventually go back and add some business people, or, you know, I would hope that the members of the board will be open to hearing from business leaders because the goal is jobs. The goal is work. The goal is pride in yourself and dignity for people, whether or not they're disabled.
No, absolutely. There's no question about that.
Yep.
So we have the next bill here, and basically it looks like it is 1498. Mm-hmm. It amends the labor laws as they relate to payment for required medical examinations.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Well, so if you're injured at work, then you will be sent oftentimes to, you'll go to your own doctor, and then you may also be asked by your employer to go to another doctor. And this basically just says that the employer will pay the copay or pay, if there's no insurance, they will pay the full cost of that. The original way that the bill was written was kind of strange, and it read as though the employer would have to pay for all costs of the insurance, which is not typically the case in any employer that I know of. So we amended it so that it's just out-of-pocket expenses must be covered by the employer.
So this is basically for workman's comp. If somebody gets injured or somebody gets hurt on the job primarily, this would be covered. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
The next one we want to talk about is Workforce Opportunities Program, LD 1489. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little about how this promotes economic opportunity.
Well, again, one of the major themes of the 126th legislature is the workforce skills gap that we have here in Maine. And, you know, unfortunately, we have a lot of jobs that go unfilled because we don't have workers in the state to fill them with the proper qualifications. And so this is LD90 was a huge bill. There was a special committee, and that was their sort of omnibus bill to address workforce issues. This is another bill sort of related, the Workforce Opportunities Program, which promotes economic opportunity and growth by providing an incentive to individuals with certain skills and experience where there is a gap between the number of available jobs requiring those skills and a smaller number of individuals willing to and able to accept. It helps businesses by establishing a registry of workers that have those skills so that they can, you know, go there first when they're seeking somebody with a particular skill. And it also offers incentives to people to pursue training and retraining opportunities in, you know, needed areas of the workforce. So again, it's just a way that Maine is trying to address this issue. And I think it's an issue all across the country, but it's particularly acute in this state, probably partly because we have so few younger workers.
It is a problem. Matter of fact, last week on the HR Power Hour, we had John Doerr and Maggie Drummond talking about the skills gap and talking about jobs here in Maine. And this fits right within that. You did say that there's going to be a registry. Who's going to have that registry?
It's the Department of Economic and Community Development in coordination with the Department of Labor. So those are the two departments that my committee directly oversees. And they're going to be working on this together. It's be a collaborative effort.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
LD 1250, revising Maine's unemployment compensation law. This is important.
Yeah. Well, this is basically, this one wasn't the big one. There were a couple other comp bills that were vetoed. This bill was one that basically just says that if you have hired someone temporarily to cover a position vacant due to a leave of absence for family medical leave, that if that person then returns to their job and you have to lay off the person that you hired temporarily, you won't be charged for their unemployment. It won't come up against your
unemployment. Well, that's important because unemployment rates for employers do matter, and they make a difference on a percentage basis. So there's no question about that.
Yes.
When we come back, I want to talk about the minimum wage law, the workers' compensation law, and the Protect Earned Pay law.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
So you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice, continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
Established in 2009, CrossFit Cascabay is Portland's most experienced strength training facility. CrossFit is the principal strength and conditioning program for many police academies, elite special forces, champion martial artists, housewives, children, and everything in between. At CrossFit Cascabay, you'll be able to reduce stress, manage weight and body composition, enhance physical strength and endurance, improve flexibility, and recover from injury or illness in a safe environment. The time is now. Stop in for a free demo. For more information, please visit CrossFitCascoBay.com. CrossFit Casco Bay, forging elite fitness.
In today's digital age of instant communication, the art of conversation is being lost. Too often, verbal communication is reduced to shouting, not talking. Join me, Steve Woods, also known as Steve-O, for Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, for inspired conversations with extraordinary guests. We'll talk sports, health, green, and life its own self. Catch Tide Smart Talk with Steve-O, Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on News Talk WLOB, AM 1310, streaming live on WLOBradio.com.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We're talking with Amy Volk, and we're talking about some bills through the legislature here in Maine. First, that did pass and will have an effect. We kind of talked about those in the last segment, Amy, but let's talk about some carryovers. And carryovers meaning that they're going to come up again in the next legislature. So there were two that we're aware of, and one being LD 690, to ensure efficiency in the unemployment insurance system.
Yes.
So talk about why they didn't pass, why they carried over, and why employers or HR professionals should be keeping up on this one.
Yeah. Well, the genesis of this bill is that Maine was having a very hard time keeping up, partially because we'd had a lot of hiring freezes, but we had been having a very hard time keeping up with processing applications for unemployment insurance. And at one point, Maine was ranked close to last in the efficiency of our system. And so the House chair learned of this and decided to put a bill in, which became LD 690, which basically puts into statute the amount of time that the Department of Labor has to process these applications. And one of the issues with this bill is that it puts us out of conformity with federal law. And it also had a very large fiscal note. And if you're out of conformity with federal law, then you risk your federal funding. And you could also significantly increase the costs that employers pay into the system. And so that was the Republican concern with this bill. They did have the votes to pass the bill. It would have been vetoed. So instead, they decided to carry it over and do a little more research. I think they want to see the Department of Labor did make some new hires, and they really did get their timelines back down to the point where they're quite efficient now. So, you know, they may just be wanting to watch and see what the Department of Labor does and make sure that they are getting these people their checks and getting their applications processed in a timely manner. And there's nothing wrong with that. So.
No, I think the big thing here is if it's going to increase the unemployment compensation for employers, that's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
It's a big number already.
Right. And it's not the fault of those employers if the State Department of Labor isn't processing applications in a timely manner. But they did recognize the issues that they were having. They were already addressing them before the bill was even introduced. So, I mean, we don't want to jeopardize the subsidies that we get from the federal government in any way. And the Department of Labor, most of the money that flows through the Department of Labor is dedicated revenue, meaning it's coming from somewhere else, flowing through to the State Department of Labor for a specific purpose. It's not money that we can just, you know, dip in and take and use in any way that we see fit.
The second bill, LD 1157, the Fair Chance for Employment. This is an interesting bill.
Yeah.
And as someone who has an employment agency looking at this, I'm not going to give an opinion yet.
Okay.
I'm going to let you explain it to the audience, and then I'll be happy to give my opinion. But tell us what it means. Again, it says Fair Chance for Employment.
Yep. I believe that this was introduced by Representative Russell from Portland. And basically, she felt some employers were discriminate against people who are already unemployed applying for jobs, and that in some cases, employers may even, in their ad for a job, may say, you know, unemployed people need not apply, meaning they weren't interested in hiring you unless you were already employed by somebody else. And so basically discriminating against people who are unemployed. The problem with this law is that increase penalties to between $250, well, I mean, it actually levied a penalty. It wasn't an increase because there was no penalty before, between $250 to $1,000. But it also really infringed upon free speech issues. And if you are a business owner, then you may be entitled under the Constitution to advertise in any way that you want about a job. So that was our committee, the legal expert on our committee's opinion that perhaps this brought up some free speech issues. I'm not really able to comment on that one way or another, but the bill was carried over, and we really weren't presented with a lot of evidence that this actually happens too much. I've never seen an ad like that. I don't believe that anybody showed us any ads like that. So it may be sort of a solution in search of a problem.
Well, this, I'm sure, came from, I believe it was in New Jersey, where a gentleman actually put out an ad that had this. And it stirred a huge national conversation about this type of advertising. Mm-hmm. The reality is that you're right. I don't think I've seen it in Maine at all. But the fact is that most employers would not put it on there,
right?
Because the fact is that that would kind of say itself about the employer,
right? True.
So you know, you wouldn't want to put anything on an advertising that could be perceived as discriminatory in any way.
Right.
But the reality is, whether it's legal or illegal, it's not going to help you hiring, because somebody's not going to want to work there anyways. So
that's,
you know,
true.
Whether or not you make that a criteria of your own fruition to hire, it's not necessarily going to help in any way. So from my opinion in this particular case, it's probably one of those bills that were a little bit over the top to react to some national news that came out there about that.
And sometimes we get that, for sure. But, you know, I mean, if it were a problem in the state, then
we
might
want
to rectify
it. We'd have to address it and look
at
it at that point.
But common decency sort of says, you don't say that. There are a lot of people who are unemployed, especially these days, through no fault of their own whatsoever.
Right. That's right. No question.
Yeah.
All right. So there were three bills that were vetoed.
Well, there were a lot more than that. But.
We're going to talk about this. No question.
Yeah.
But there were three bills that I were going to talk about that were vetoed that had a pretty big impact in terms of what's going on in the state.
Yeah.
First one is LD 611, minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to raise the minimum wage to $8 per hour beginning July 1st, 2014. It was going to go to $8.50 July 1st, 2015, and $9 an hour July 1st, 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would just go up automatically after that with the adjusted for inflation every year, with no end in sight in terms of that particular end. So it got vetoed, and it was sustained in the veto. Do you see this coming back?
I think that the minimum wage issue comes back time and time again. So, yeah, I see it coming back. I don't see it coming back in the second half of this session, but it will come back again in the 127th and probably in the 128th. And, you know, I mean, fortunately this time around, we had the governor's veto on our side and we were able to make it go away. You know, Maine struggles in its business environment. There are a lot of things in the state that are beyond our control. Our geography is beyond our control. To some extent, even the price we pay for power is beyond our control. It's very difficult to deal with the cost of health insurance in this state. That is somewhat beyond our control. This is something I believe that we can control quite easily. It's noble to want to make sure that people can support their families and earn, you know, a living wage, for example.
Well, I think that's the difference, right? There's
a
living wage and a minimum wage.
But the goal is to get to that living wage standard, which is probably in Cumberland County around $25 an hour or something. So we're still a long way off. But you just really have to recognize the fact that most people who are getting paid minimum wage are not supporting a family. You know, it's not the single mother with three children at home. That is very rare. And the single mother with three children at home working for minimum wage is receiving a lot of other benefits from the state, I guarantee you. So she's not just surviving on whatever she makes on minimum wage. So it's damaging to business. That's the bottom line.
The second one is LD 443, workers' compensation. Talk a little bit about what that bill would have done, and again, if we think we will see it come back up again.
Well, this bill sort of has to go back to the 125th legislature, where we took care of a section of law that dealt with permanent impairment and partial incapacity, and where we basically said that if you are injured on the job, then you're given 10 years of benefits, and then you really need to become trained to do some other form of work if you still have an ability. It sort of goes back to that dignity issue of what's dignified, to collect a check for the rest of your life or to work in whatever capacity that you have. And if you can't earn the same amount of money that you earned before, or you can't do the same job you did before, the state pays to retrain you. And you can also receive money to help pay, make up the difference. So the unions, essentially, were very unhappy with the compromise that was struck at the end of the 125th legislature that fixed that partial incapacity piece in our unemployment compensation law. And so when they came back and the Democrats regained the power in this legislature, they not only tried to roll back that piece, but they tried to roll back the entire system so that it actually would have been a worse system than we've had since 1992. They would have undone a lot of the changes that were passed under Governor McKernan, in fact, with this bill. So fortunately, it was vetoed, and we were able to sustain that veto. But it would have been devastating to businesses.
Sure. The last one we're going to talk about is 1198, Protect mm-hmm. Earned Pay. Tell me a little bit about that, and do you think that that will be back?
Possibly. Again, the 125th legislature passed a compromise that basically said that if you become unemployed, that you have to collect and you have vacation pay due you, then you'll be paid that. And once that ends or at 4 weeks, then on and only then do you start collecting your unemployment. So essentially, you're not receiving two sets of checks for a period of time, and we established that at being maximum of 4 weeks' time. And that was a compromise in the 125th that was bipartisan. And then, unfortunately, this time around, they tried to bring that back down to where you would immediately be eligible for unemployment and be able to collect unemployment along with your vacation pay beginning at the time of separation. And so this is, you know, one that HR professionals certainly would be impacted by. And so we may see it again. Probably in the 127th.
they seem to come back.
Yeah,
over again.
We fight the same battles over and over and over, over again. And you just hope that the outcome, in my case, I hope that the outcome benefits Maine businesses and Maine economy and ultimately Maine workers. Because if we don't have businesses that are successful in this state, then no one's getting paid.
That's right. No, there's no question. Well, Amy, I want to thank you very much for taking the opportunity today to talk with us about some of the things that are going to impact employers out there. I think the fact that if the number one takeaway of anything today is the fact that, yes, you can call your legislature, and yes, they actually will talk to you, and that it doesn't happen enough. And that's an education for the employers and employees out there. So
absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you want to hear more about this show or any other show, go to hrpowerhour.com. Amy's topic will be there after this show today, and you can download or listen to it live. And if you want to contact her, you can go to the HR Power Hour and look up her contact information. And now your HR tip of the week. Every organization reports problems with effective new employee onboarding. However, the organizations that onboard their employees the best are almost always ones that guide and mentor each and every employee through the entire process. Somebody who understands that it's important to help somebody right at the beginning of their employment and really get them engaged in the operation and understanding how it goes and how it works really then takes the time to make sure they're effective and efficient through the entire 10, 20, 30 years of their employment. So your tip of the week is very simple. Make it clear that someone's important right at the beginning of their employment, and they will be with you for a long time. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with attorney Katie Rand. She is from Pierce Atwood. She is going to be talking about three important Supreme Court decisions that have made a difference in 2013 for the HR community and for businesses alike. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.